Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 170 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltak. Thanks for joining me again today on the show. We've got an action-packed one for you. We're going to have Ms. Wilson on for the duration this time. We've got an important email that came in from a CCFR member, and it spurs a greater conversation, so we're going to talk about that. Big political changes happening in Canada right now, big ones. And it is great news for gun owners. So look forward to a chat on that. We've got an update on the Sydney Island deer cull. It went from completely ridiculous now to worse. So we're going to give you a bit of an update on that. And of course, what would be an episode of CCFR Radio Podcast without another example, a tweet from an anti-gun group that just demonstrates the buffoonery that we have to tolerate on an ongoing basis. Anyway, all that and more in this episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Let's get started. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR Radio Podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR. With a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter, they have what you need. Plus, free shipping over $250, which includes ammo, or flat rate shipping of $17 under $250. Some conditions apply. Subscribe to their weekly newsletter to get first access to the hottest deals. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. All right, we are back and via Skype, we've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
Wilson! Wilson!
Hey, Giltaka, I'm here from the new Casa Wilson.
Yeah, well, your studio got disassembled, I guess, for your move, and we'll see how long it takes to get reassembled.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. It'll be like a contest.
Yeah, okay. We're going to turn it into a contest.
In the meantime, we're here in my office.
So. Yeah, it's like a hockey pool, sort of.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so we actually have a little bit to cover. A reminder that this is going to be the last episode of all of July, and the next episode will be on August the 8th. So we get a little bit of a break, so that's good news, right?
Yeah, well, it's like the summer schedule. So people are busy doing summertime things, and so are we. So, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So the first thing that we have, well, now I got to put the old glasses on. The first thing we have is I've got a letter mail that has been sent to us.
We get letter mail.
Yeah, we do. We actually do. But this is an interesting email that I received, and this was back at the end of May. And I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit because it was a little bit longer than this, but I'm going to run through this really quick just so everyone gets the gist, because I think it was interesting. So the letter reads, and it's from a CCFR member, Mike. He says, "Good morning, Rod and Tracy. I'm 61 years old. I've been a hunter and a target shooter all my life. I hold an RPAL. My wife and two daughters also have firearms licenses. I'm a CCFR member, angler, and hunter, and a member of the Orillia Gun Club in Ontario. Before the Liberal government brought in their new handgun laws, my 85-year-old father was clearly in denial. He simply did not believe the Canadian government would ever put a freeze on handguns. Unfortunately, he was wrong, and soon after, the handgun freeze was implemented and my window to transfer the guns into my name was closed. I'm now left wondering how I'm going to be able to save my rightful inheritance from landing in the hands of the RCMP. The stress this has caused is constant. The only alternative I have come up with is to save my father's handguns is to transfer them to an American friend I have. He lives in Pennsylvania and has agreed to take them for safekeeping until we finally put a leader in place that will end this nightmare. I've contacted the CFO and they've informed me that I can transfer my handguns to my American friend. The other benefit that this will provide is if the government does not change, I hate to even think of that, it will allow me a place to go to legally use the handguns. To my knowledge, this is the only way I can see to save my father's legally obtained property. I'm sure there are many other Canadians in the same position. Feel free to share this last resort idea with anyone you know. Thanks for taking the time to read this. I appreciate all of your efforts and stand behind you on everything you're trying to accomplish. So that was Mike.
Oh, Mike. Yeah. I think about that too. You know, if something happened to me and my family and my widow would be here grieving, you know, how long would it take for the RCMP to come knock and take my stuff? Like, for what?
Well,
it's crazy.
And it's interesting because they call it a freeze. They don't call it a ban. It is a ban because
it's a ban.
If Mike's father passes away, the RCMP are coming and they're taking all the property and destroying it with no compensation. That's the way it's set up right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that in itself is tragic. It shouldn't be like this. And meanwhile, you know, crime has never been higher. So
yeah, violence has never been worse. So I think I wanted to bring this up for a couple of reasons. Number one, this is a real life story of the impact or the consequences of the Liberals' approach on gun control. It's only affecting people like Mike and Mike's dad. It's not having any effect on the lives of people that would use firearms in violent interactions. And you can show as much proof as you want, but because it's an ideological issue, you know, the hard radical leftists in Canada that have been pushing for this forever, they'll never understand it because it's ideological. They couldn't care less about evidence. But one of the other reasons why I did want to bring this up is it gives us an opportunity just to let people out there know. If you have newly prohibited firearms, like handguns specifically aren't prohibited, they've done this through other means, but you also have the newly prohibited firearms from May 2020 and all the variants. You can export these firearms, okay? You can call the firearms program for help on that. You can deactivate them and in a last-ditch effort to actually save the physical firearm that will never fire again. Or you can sell them to a business that may want them. Now, most businesses don't want anything to do with any of these prohibited firearms because they're worthless to them. They can't resell them. Another thing that our friends over at Poly love to lie about, right? They're like, well, you can sell them to a business. It's like, yeah, for like $100, $2,000 rifle for, you know, whatever, $250. Because what's a business going to do with them, right?
No,
so,
they can't sell them.
And you may find a business that you could transfer or sell or whatever that firearm to them to be kept on premises until the government changes. That might be an option too. So anyway, you do not have to surrender these guns is the whole point for destruction. There are other options between now and when this horrific nightmare of a government finally moves to its end.
Can't come soon enough.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for everybody other than a handful of crazy people. So, anyway, speaking of this government being washed up, there was an election in a very important riding, which is St. Paul's.
Yeah, that's right. So on June 24th, we had a very important by-election. It was actually called a referendum on Trudeau's future in Toronto, St. Paul's. Now, this has been called the Liberal Fortress for over 30 years. It's been a stronghold for the Liberals. And what's really interesting is the Conservatives ended up taking it. It was quite close, but it shouldn't have even been close. The Conservatives came up 20 points from where they were in that riding in the last election. And why that's important is for decades, it's gone fully Liberal with Conservatives not even having a chance. People didn't think this guy had a chance either, but he came back and won it. The Liberals ran Leslie Church. You may remember her. She's a star Liberal candidate. She's the former chief of staff for Chrystia Freeland. She's married to a lobbyist who specializes in media and pharmaceuticals. It was crazy. 44% voter turnout in this riding, which is twice what it was in 2021 during the last federal election, which shows that the votership is super motivated. So, yeah, it was a huge win. for the conservatives and a huge upset for the liberals. And of course, it's led to a lot of calls for Justin Trudeau to step down, although I am not one of those people calling for it. But yeah, well, another interesting point I wanted to bring on was normally in something like this, when the liberals, you know, liberal voters are disenfranchised and they're a little upset with their leader or their party, they, you know, they're lefties, right? So instead of voting liberal, they may vote NDP. The NDP should have picked up a lot of votes on this one. They actually were down 6 points from where they were in the 2021 election. So they lost votes as well. And to me, I would look at that as a sign that instead of picking up votes, they lost votes because of their deal with the devil in the confidence and supply agreement that they have with the liberals right now, currently propping them up. So just huge upset all around. And it's been the talk of politics here in the Ottawa bubble ever since.
Well, it's, I don't know, are people figuring out that runaway government debt is actually affecting their lives and driving interest rates to go up, driving the price of everything to go up, you know, having to service $57 billion a year to service debt with no new services. That's just money they have to extract from everyone just to for interest payments. Like, you can't do it forever. I don't know. Could it be, Wilson, that people are starting to figure this out? Could it be?
Yes, it is. In fact, there are four other important by-elections coming up, maybe over the summer, in the fall. You've got LaSalle, Emard, Verdun, which is a suburb in Montreal. Cloverdale, Langley City is coming up. Elmwood, Transcona, and Halifax. So these were all ridings where the Liberals did really well, and they're polling to lose all of them. So not necessarily all to the Conservatives, but they will lose all those ridings as well. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Instead of calling an early election, maybe this is how we're going to do it, just by-election by by-election, but whatever it takes, man.
Yeah, it's so. like attrition. Now, there's an updated federal model as far as what some of the pollsters think the federal election, how that would turn out. Do you have that with you?
Yeah, so it's showing the Liberals with 222 seats, which of course would be a huge conservative majority. What's really interesting about that is we are 56 consecutive weeks and holding with a conservative majority. And why that's different is people say, well, you know, under Andrew Scheer or under Erin O'Toole, we also had, you know, polls that showed the Conservatives winning. But it was nothing like this. Nothing with these numbers, and of course, nothing with that type of consistency. So 56 straight weeks, over a year of conservative majority polling. So I don't know. It's not a trend. It's status quo like that. It's static. So, yeah, I saw an interview with David Coletto, and he said that if this continues, we may see the Conservatives end up with 240 seats, which is just mind-blowing, right?
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, the Liberals considered their minority government a mandate to do whatever it is that they wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, with 211 seats, much less 220 seats, that is an extremely clear mandate. So let's not have all of these people that are, you know, concerned about our democracy start shedding tears when the government says, hey, you know what? These people broke it and it's going to be painful to fix it. And they start fixing things, you know?
Yeah.
It's a very clear mandate.
You know, you always have run that risk of when you're cheering on your side to do all of these things, you know, even though they don't really have the mandate to do it, they're being propped up by the NDP in order to get things done, and people are cheering it on, right? Always remember that when that pendulum swings the other way, you might be the one who gets it.
So, well, and reasonable people, that's why reasonable people say, hey, the government shouldn't be involved in all of these things, right? Like no government, whether it's a centrist government, a leftist government, or a right-wing government. It's like there's a lot of things that the government shouldn't be involved in. So it's like you know, you're cheering for, you know, those who live by the sword, die by the sword. You're cheering for the government to use the sword. It's like, well, somebody else might pick that sword up too. How about we not use the sword, you know, at all? And then you don't have to worry about that.
We're past that, unfortunately.
Yeah. So yeah. You don't have to trade your children's future for a $400 carbon rebate check. You know, like think about it. But anyway, all right. Hey, think with your thinker.
Yeah.
That's what it's for.
It.
All right. Let's move on to, there's a bit of an update, I think, with Senator Platt that came up with an update on the Sydney Island deer call. Like, this is a hunting-related super scandal. It's the most ridiculous buffoonery that you can possibly imagine. Give us a bit of an update on this. Ms. Wilson.
Yeah, that's right. So Senator Platt put out a video. He's been asking a lot of questions. He does a really good job on that, actually. And the numbers for the Sydney Island deer call, speaking of craziness, are ballooning out of control. So originally the government reported that they've spent $800,000 to eradicate, I think it was 82 deer. So you're talking about $10,000 per deer. And I think, you know, all Canadians were like, what? That's crazy. Well, it turns out this project has a $12 million budget earmarked to it. So that $10,000 per deer suddenly becomes $142,857 per deer. What's really wild is just all these added expenses now to the program. They've spent $1.5 million on studies and consultations, which this government is famous for, just to study this. The sharpshooters that they hired to go in and slaughter the deer shot 20% of the wrong species. They spent $67,000 renting a helicopter, $84,000 on insurance, and then get this, $137,000 on firearm certification. And I did the math before we started the show. You know, the average, well, I'm here in the city, so it's probably more expensive here, but the average firearm certification course here in my city is probably about $200. So that would certify almost 700 sharpshooters. That's not what they used. So it would be interesting to see who got those contracts and what they charged per certification.
$150,000 to get these guys like a firearms license and maybe some, you know what I mean, a brief about Canadian law, or, you know, go over some policies about, you know, how, you know, methods, like how are we going to do this via helicopter, you know, study the island, where's all the private property, you know, maybe look at the different species. Like, is there anything these people can do right, honestly?
No. No, there isn't.
It's a resounding,
that's the answer.
It's a resounding no. And then apparently, I think you have this information because I thought we talked about it before, that the government's position is that their use of whatever it was, restricted firearms with full capacity magazines and all the rest of that stuff, was on these small deer, these so-called assault style weapons, as they like to call them, using them on these deer that are half the size, this is an acceptable practice apparently.
Yeah, that's right. They said that the methods that they selected, which is basically, you know, a helicopter borne slaughter with semi-autos and 30-round magazines, those methods selected are globally proven and aligned with internationally recognized principles. So it's interesting that Justin Trudeau says you don't need an AR-15 to take down a deer. You know, the deer we're hunting, whitetail or blacktail or muleys, are huge animals. These are tiny little fallow deer. They're basically dogs with horns. And they still just slaughtered everything. But I, it's interesting. I never want to hear anyone talk to me about how inhumane hunting is when the government clearly states that sharpshooters with AR-15s hanging out of helicopters, mowing down everything, including the wrong species, is globally proven to align with international standards.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And speaking of, if you want to keep the stupidity rolling, like pure, unadulterated stupidity, we've got a little poly tweet here. Let me have a look.
Oh boy.
So basically, there's a CCFR member, Ryan Hollyoak, had tweeted, "Hey, this is a hunting rifle that I use. This was a BCL 102, which was a 308, right? That is now prohibited." He tweets, you know, or tweets out that, "Hey, like this was purpose built for Canadian compliance, and an exceptional hunting rifle." And then Polly says back, "Just because some use a specific gun for hunting doesn't make it a hunting rifle. You can also use a bazooka to kill a deer." So you got this group and they go back and forth. You know, it's an indicator of how tenuous your argument is, how absolutely untenable your position is on an issue. if you actually have to argue back and forth two different directions to try to tell someone they're wrong no matter what they say. One minute they're like, nope, assault weapons are, the SKS is an assault weapon and not a hunting rifle. On the other side, they're like, oh, they're not banning any hunting rifles, even though the liberals have banned some 22s, they banned some shotguns, they banned various bolt actions, and they went to ban a whole ton more, but like, they want it both ways. That's how you can tell that you're wrong. Anyway.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I've said multiple times, arguing with people on Twitter and they're saying, oh, Trudeau didn't ban any hunting guns. And it's like, first of all, who's to say what is appropriate or legitimate for hunting? Well, a hunter. If it was previously non-restricted and of a caliber that is suitable and legal for hunting the whatever game it is that you're after, guess what? It's a hunting rifle, period. In fact, OFA, Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters, published a study back in October of 2021. So they took the big list from the OIC. They just randomly chose 65 guns out of there, did a study on them, pulled their membership. They have a huge membership in Ontario. And basically, the answer is, there's no specific definition for a hunting gun, except it's a gun that you can hunt with. Like, it's literally, that's what it is. So, I don't know. It's to think that Pauly Sussuvier is an expert on anything, let alone hunting or what's legitimate or appropriate for its use, is funny. And, they've been going pretty hard at Pierre Poilievre, leader of the official opposition. And I think to myself, they should be careful with that, because eventually we will have an election. And all of the terrible things they say about him and all the poop that they're flinging at him now. Don't forget, when he becomes prime minister, he's going to remember all of that. It's fairly short-sighted to just get in that tribal corner and just think that that's it. So I just don't know how effective they'll be after the next election. So
We'll see. Well, they are such a mess. It's funny, they criticize everyone else, and they are the worst representatives of their side of the argument. And I actually prepared another tweet here. And I'm just going to read it. Okay. So Pauly says, with respect to gun control, Pierre Poilievre is definitely creating anger on top of capitalizing on it. He continues to lie to hunters, claiming that Justin Trudeau is coming after their guns. Hashtag fear mongering, hashtag ban assault weapons. They're not assault weapons. Hashtag not hunting guns. It's what's amazing about that tweet is, it's psychopathic, right? Because number one, Pierre Poilievre is not creating the anger. The government, the Liberals, with full cooperation from the NDP and the Bloc, are creating the anger by going after the people we just talked about. People, right? People like Mike that sent that email to us. That's where the anger is coming from. And they're like, no, it's not coming from the fact that the government is blaming firearm-related violence that they've created on licensed gun owners that haven't done anything, and then taking their property and vilifying them. That's not why gun owners are angry. They're angry because Pierre Poilievre is lying to them, telling them they're taking their guns. And then at the same time, like, this is how crazy people talk. Then at the same time, they say that the guy that's telling the truth is lying. They're lying to whoever will read their garbage material about somebody else lying. Like, it's psychopathic is what it is. Like, if you start looking at it and you're thinking like, well, what if a regular person said this, that I was sitting across the table from, you'd be like, this person's a psychopath. It's psychopathic. Yeah. It's wild.
Well, I hope all of these tweets and messaging that they've put out, is remembered in the hallowed halls of Parliament long after this government is done. So
yeah,
I'll make sure of it. I saved them all.
Yeah, me too. All right. Enough of these crazy lunatics running around setting fire to everything. You've got a few events this summer that you're going to be attending. So why don't you give us a quick overview of that?
Yeah, so I'm not nearly as busy as I was last summer because I'm trying to scale back. Although compiling this list last night, I am quite busy. But the next one coming up is Sunday, July 14th. I will be in Windsor, Ontario at the annual General Gun Golf Tournament in support of the CCFR. Now, this is I'm not a golfer, but I have the greatest time here. We have so much fun. And they raise a bucket load of money for the CCFR. So, yeah, big thanks to Brian and the whole team at General Gun. I cannot wait to see you. July 25th to the 29th, I will be in beautiful southern BC, actually almost near you, for the Western edition of the CCFR Gunny Girl Calendar photo shoot and retreat weekend. We'll be nestled in the mountains near Agassiz. So I'm really excited for that. August 7th to 11th, I'll be in Peterborough, Ontario at IPSC Handgun Nationals, where 500 or more of Canada's best pistol shooters will compete over a five-day tournament. We're proud to sponsor that event again this year. I'm going to be speaking at the banquet. I believe the local MP, Michelle Ferrari, will be there as well. So that will be a lot of fun. August 16th to 19th, I'll be somewhere in Ontario, a location to be determined, for the Eastern edition of the CCFR calendar photo shoot. So keep your eyes open for our Gunny Girls there. August 24th, I'll be at Lower Trent Valley Fish and Game. We are doing a ladies' range day there. This is a huge event. It's super anticipated. It's massive. I think there's 110 or 120 women coming. Big shout out to Nick and the whole gang over at Lower Trent Valley. We'll have a lot of CCFR volunteers on hand as well. August 31st, I'll be at Ladies Range Day at Eastern Ontario Shooting Club here in Ottawa, my home club. So more details are going to come out about that. September 6th through the 8th, we will be at TACOM Canada in Toronto. All the details can be found at tacomcanada.ca. And of course, that takes us right into the fall, which is my birthday, and the House resumes sitting, and we go into the last term of this government. So that's the summer.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're just taking it easy this summer, hey?
I'm sorry, Colin.
Just taking her easy. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to, you know, travel around, run the roads, and drive myself crazy again this summer. Yes, I am. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Hey, it's your choice, man. That's your choice.
Yeah, these are all good events, and, you know, there's some breaks in between, so it'll be fine. August is a little busy, but that's okay.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah. Thanks for doing that. All right. Now we have some pictures from some of our Lady Hunter Gunny Girls.
Yeah. Well, I've been noticing lately that social media has been completely flooded by all these awesome girls on their hunting adventures. And, of course, hunting season isn't just in the fall. You've got spring bear. Some of these girls go on international hunts. And it just strikes me seeing all these cool girls out there literally killing it, getting these monstrous animals. Like, it's almost mind-boggling how big they are. And, of course, I get a little bit extra pride when I see them because a lot of them are CCFR Gunny Girl alumni. So, yeah, maybe I'm just being selfish, but I wanted to give them some attention and a shout out on the show. And of course, wish everyone a successful harvest. So, yeah.
Well, you see all these women being successful in their harvest and I was unsuccessful. WTF.
So what you're saying is you do not hunt better than a girl.
No.
Okay. All right.
Not at this point.
No. Well, maybe one of these girls could take you on a hunt and teach you a little something.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Awesome. Okay. All right. Well, we covered our list.
Yeah, we did it.
And you're just going to accompany me through the outro just because I don't have much to say. The only thing I want to mention is we are on summer hours now. So the next podcast will be on August the 8th, as I said, when we first started talking. So that'll be 5 weeks from now. So everyone gets a little break from our yapping and dragging other people through the mud. And we'll be back, in about 5 weeks and with a bunch more news and see where we go from there.
All right. That sounds great. We'll see you then.
See you then.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.